In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
Toronto's breaking news, traffic and weather. This is Jerry Agar, News Talk 1010.
About once a month, we get this little panel together, call it Law and Order, from the Toronto Police Association, the union for the police officers. Mike McCormick is here, the president. Good to have you.
Great to be here.
Are you still officially a cop?
Yes, I am seconded to the union.
I see.
On a full-time basis. So Officially, I am a police officer. Still.
But you don't walk around all day with a badge and a gun?
I do not perform the functions of a police officer in my daily job.
Do you still have the powers?
Hours.
No, do you still have the powers of a police officer?
Technically, I do.
Okay. And Ed Prucci, your license is still in place.
Last I checked, I'm still a licensed lawyer, which grants me no powers, no authority, but lots of responsibility.
CrimLawCanada.com. We'll get to the interaction between your two groups in just a moment, but I have to jump in, Mike, to this 28-day announcement from the chief of police. We're only a couple of days away from the legalization of marijuana. That would mean that a police officer has as much right as any of the rest of us to have a shot of bourbon or smoke a joint, whatever. However,
right.
For people in some jobs, there are rules and regulations regarding when you can drink and how sober you have to be when you show up. Pilots, doctors, police officers. Here's the Toronto Police Chief talking to John Moore.
I'm not saying zero tolerance.
You'd have to be on leave or something, though.
Well, you know, when you take a couple of days off and annual leave with your midnight shift, you wind up with 18 days or something along those lines. If you want to smoke, smoke. But I have to be responsible. And I'll always...
I don't understand that. I thought it was 28 days, though.
Yeah, it is 28 days.
Okay.
So when people say, oh, my gosh, it's impossible. It's not impossible if you're motivated to indulge in recreational drugs. And I will say recreational drugs because that's what it is. And we've lived a long time without it. So I don't see why this has all of a sudden become this magnificent, oh, my gosh, I can't believe we don't have the opportunity to. And when you joined, I'm pretty sure you asked a question, how much do you smoke? And if you started to put numbers on a table, this is what I do on a frequent basis, you probably wouldn't be employed by us. But having said that, you have the right to smoke. It is legal. I have to see what is the safe mechanism for policing.
All right. How are you reacting to all of this? I think you said last week the union would fight this.
Yeah. Well, first of all, this is a draft policy. We have a meeting with the chief and the service later on this week to talk about that before it actually gets implemented as a policy. We think that it's wrought with disaster, 28 days. We don't know where the science behind that. And, as you said, we have rigorous rules around being fit for duty, and you have to be fit for duty. You can't be impaired by alcohol, by drugs, by lack of sleep, and you're assessed and require supervisors who are trained to look at signs of impairment through, like I said, anything from fatigue to alcohol. So that needs to be the test. To say that you're going to have a 28-day period, and what's that based on?
Is that based on impairment?
Well, what I think is reasonable is that you have to be fit for duty. And if you're fit for duty and you're not impaired, then you should be allowed to go out. And this isn't like, to the chief's point, that all our officers are going, oh, yeah, I can't wait for Wednesday. We're all going to go grab a bong and start smoking high times here. Our officers are responsible. But to say that, okay, that is a 28-day period, so what does that mean, first of all, to all the people who are driving their vehicles? What does that mean to people who are operating heavy equipment? We're saying that impairment or it being in your system for 28 days could cause impairment. I think that's a big concern for the legal community. It's a concern for us. Not only that, Jerry, but so we're out working together and we go and we're investigating some people smoking on the street and they're smoking and you're getting, you're inhaling that smoke. Now you've got smoke in your system. So now as an officer, am I supposed to declare and go off on workman's comp and say, I've been exposed to secondhand smoke. I have it in my system.
The Ross Rebliati defense.
Well, there
Remember
you go.
Remember the snowboarder?
Yeah. What does that mean?
So he was an Olympic gold medal snowboarder
exactly.
And tested positive after the fact. They make everybody pee in the cup, tested positive for marijuana, which still sort of, I've never quite understood why that's considered a performance enhancing drug from an athletic perspective, but it is. It's on the banned list. And his defense ultimately was, look, I was at a party a couple of weeks. He said a couple of weeks before coming coming out to the Olympics. Everybody else was smoking up, but I, of course, I'm a an athlete and I'm in full training. I wasn't doing that, but that's why it was in my system. They couldn't prove him wrong at the time, and as a result, he got his gold back.
Okay, yeah. So are you actively, Mike McCormick, fighting this?
Well, again, we're actively in a discussion around the policy. It hasn't been implemented as a 28-day period, and we're having some discussions. If it stands as a 28-day period, then we will definitely be fighting it, because it's fraught with all kinds of issues. And I think, it's going to create, exacerbate an already critical situation we have with the staffing, where, I'm exposed to weed or the smoke. And I'm going to be going off IOD, injured on duty, because it's in my system. I'm going to have to self-declare.
This is a gift. This is an absolute gift to defense lawyers from the chief, and I appreciate it. And Nick, please send me the audio of all of this after, because it's going to be part of my cross-examination for every officer in circumstances where my clients get pulled over for suspected drug-impaired driving and are being told, look, you tested positive for such and such. The issue is the question of impairment, not the question of the presence of THC, the psychoactive ingredient in marijuana. The problem is that science is not the same for alcohol as it is for marijuana. And so the science is telling us, look, we don't actually know. Yeah, we can detect how many nanograms are in your system. And the federal government has given us all sorts of legislation and machines that they tell us are lawful to conduct this test and get that number. But the number doesn't tell you, as a breathalyzer number does, whether or not a person is impaired.
Right.
And so when I ask an officer, wait, sir, you've got to be off duty for 28 days when you smoke. And that's not necessarily because you're impaired, right? You don't consider yourself impaired in that circumstance. No, of course not. Well, you arrested my client and charged him with driving impaired when he says it's been 9 days or 22 days since the last time he smoked. He's not impaired either. Isn't that right? I mean, it's an absolute gift.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, that's exactly our point. So the answer to your question, if the 28-day stands, yeah, we will fight it, because it just makes no sense.
It could be a big mess in society, as Ed points out.
With more of Toronto's breaking news, traffic, and weather, here's Jerry Agar, News Talk 1010.
An episode of Law & Order featuring the president of the Toronto Police Association, the union, Mike McCormick, and our legal analyst, Ed Prucci, from crimlawcanada.com. So, Mike, you're a police officer. He's a criminal defense lawyer, keeping criminals on the street since 1999. And you're all under the justice system. Do you see yourselves as part of the same system, in your view? We'll see what Ed says. Or is he, if not the enemy, the opposition?
No, we're all part of the same system, and we all have a role to play in the justice system. So it all works hand in hand. We're there to do our jobs and put people before the courts when we have the grounds to do that. And it's Ed's job to defend them and to make sure that their rights and things are done in accordance with the law and through proper legislation is followed. And so I think we work together, actually.
100%. I get along really, really well with police officers. I genuinely do. With the vast majority of cops, at the conclusion of a trial, I've had trials, murder trials, where while we're waiting for the jury verdict, I'm out for dinner with the officer in charge and the Crown attorneys. This is a job that if we all do our jobs correctly, then the system is going to get the right answer. If one of us does our jobs incorrectly, unethically, inappropriately, then we'd better hope that the others are there to fix that, because otherwise the system is prone to making mistakes. So we work together.
All right. But I know that the frustration that some police officers, maybe many police officers, have is sort of what they see as a turnstile catch and release kind of aspect. You guys catch them, and then smart guys like Ed Prucci get them off.
Yeah. And again, I think that, for Ed, that's why people like Ed are well paid for what they do. They work for their clients, but it's not Ed's. We're all working within a system, whether I'm arresting people and putting them before the courts. I'm following the laws of this country and the legislation, and to say that Ed's getting them out, that's Ed's doing his job for the clients, but that's got to do with working within the system and the framework of the laws that we have, and that's what the responsibility is on all parties. It doesn't mean that I necessarily like lawyers, but you know what I mean? They're people.
Okay,
I'm talking about the role in the system.
Some of my best friends are lawyers.
I know one or two.
But Mike, I guess it's fair to say that in fact, if you guys have all your ducks in a row and you have the proper evidence, he can't get them off.
Right, exactly. But, hear our, we always hear, and you know, when we, whether it's we're defending our members or Ed's defending people on the street or stuff, the technical breaches of the law and stuff like that. Yeah, it's, but that's what the system is set up for, is to, an abundance of caution, to make sure that when you're taking away somebody's liberties and incarcerating them, that it's done in the proper way.
All right, Joe Warmington is writing today. Mayor John Turi went into Friday not happy with Toronto police cutting down two key units in the war on guns, gangs, and drugs. By the end of the day, he was satisfied this was no longer the case. The mayor said, the mayor of Toronto, "I have been assured this morning by the chief and the senior command that there will be no change to the number of officers fighting this kind of criminal activity." This story's been around for a little bit, that that was an area where the police were going to cut back to try and get the budget in order. Gangs, guns, and drugs. Was that your understanding, Ed? They were cutting back?
I mean, certainly the headlines that came out screamed that guns and gangs were having a number of officers removed from their teams. And so I responded the same way everybody else did, and the same way that Mayor Tory did, where he said, as a member of the Police Services Board and as a person currently running for re-election, "Well, that sounds dumb, and I'm going to ask the chief about that." Now, he came out of that meeting, which I did not attend to, so I don't know what was said there, but he came out feeling satisfied that that's not, in fact, the case. So I don't know what was told to him, but he now feels that we've got the same number of cops on guns and gangs as we did before.
Are you satisfied, Mike McCormick?
No, I'm not satisfied, because, you know, the whole confusion about how this happened, and for everybody, including the police association and our members, was, yes, they were told that the teams were going to be downsized, that we were going to lose two teams, not only from guns and gangs, from the drug squad. And then, you know, that was announced, and then it was walked back by the Deputy Chief McLean, who got out and said, well, hold on, no. So within a 24-hour period, that story had changed three times. So that doesn't give me a lot of confidence into what's going on, you know, at headquarters, as far as that's concerned. So, you know, is it in fact that the size of the units are going to stay the same? Or are they saying, well, they're going to stay the same until somebody's promoted or moves out, and they're going to downsize them through attrition? And we're still not sure on what that is. And I'm going to seek clarification this week on that point.
Meanwhile, we understand that Toronto police are expanding neighborhood policing programs.
Ugh, I mean, give me a break. You know, I'm so tired of this rhetoric around, oh, we're expanding, and we've got these neighborhood programs. We don't have sufficient people to answer the calls on the street. We're putting out roughly around 160 police officers, 160 in this entire city to answer all the radio calls in the city. People are waiting hours for us to show up. Service has gone down. We're not responding to certain calls now. People are still being put on hold on 911. And now we're saying we're expanding into this neighborhood policing. Tell me, where are we getting these police officers from? Because, you know, the last class we put through was around 50. We've lost over 250 officers this year alone, and we're still going. So it's nonsense to say that these enhanced neighborhood programs are going to help the situation right now, because we're taking officers who are responding to calls and putting in the neighborhoods. We need more resources to do this properly. So it's just a shell game right now.
I can't speak to where these cops are coming from, but what I can say is that the stats on this program look really, really good, right? They've piloted this, and what they say is that an officer stays in that same division, in that same neighborhood, for a minimum of 4 years, that everybody gets to know the officers' names. And when they polled independently, they had Ryerson University, I think it was, yep, poll the people in the neighborhoods and say, how do you feel about these uniformed police officers? Rather than the usual blowback that we hear about, they're oppressing, yep, us, we don't want cops in our communities, they said, we like it, by something like 7 out of 10 people, right, were in, yeah, favor of that. And again, sounds like a good place to spend your money.
We don't debate that. The value of community-based policing, I'm one of the largest advocates for it, but you have to have the resources. What I really take exception to is them playing games with the numbers, saying, oh, we're having additional officers. We don't have additional officers.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.